This is Audiomunity, a podcast about our body's never-ending fight with the outside world.
Hello, this is Audiomunity, episode 201, 201, season 2, episode 1, episode 33, I don't know. Whatever, we're back. We're recording on January 23rd, 2025, and I'm Kevin Bonham, and I'm joined today by Kate France.
Hey, how you doing?
Getting along. And we're also joined by Matt Woodruff.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm really excited to be back here.
Yeah, so it's been, I think, 7 years since our last recording. The last few recordings were quite sporadic. We tried out a series of different hosts, some of whom may come back. We don't know. But the three of us, the original team, the OG Audiomunity crew, is back together. And we're hoping to actually do this again. So we're going to talk today a little bit about what we've been doing over the past nearly decade, how COVID went for us, our families, because we all have kids now, And then we'll talk a little bit about what we want to do with this podcast that's different, what we want to do that's the same, and yeah, I'm excited to be back.
I'm excited. I like our British model of releasing series. So, like, it could be there's a new series in 3 months. It could be 7 years. You never know. Like, enter Sherlock, all your favorite BBC shows.
Right.
There'll be a Christmas special in 4 years. Don't worry.
That's right.
I love this plan. So I think first up, we should just sort of talk about who we are because, you know, I don't know, maybe we're going to get some new listeners. We do have, I checked the Patreon page, and we still have 8 people that are pledging a total of $12 a month for this show. They haven't been charged in years, but they're, they're still there, which is great. I have set the billing so that it won't actually start until March. So hopefully we'll release a couple of episodes. People will be warned. I hope we don't charge them if they don't want to still support us. But if you do, that's awesome. Patreon.com/audioimmunity. The old RSS feed was a Google feed burner link. So once I figure out how to set up a new RSS feed without paying Squarespace $25 a month, I will do that as well. So hopefully the old podcast RSS link will work. We've got the Patreon. It's going to be great. But yeah, let's just talk about who we are and what we're doing. So I think maybe we'll start with Matt. Who are you?
Yeah.
What have you been doing?
So many things. Yeah, it was funny. You and I were talking the other night, but you know, looking back, I have so little memory of when we tried to start re-recording 7 years ago that I think it's actually worth jogging my own memory way back to when we started this in grad school. Because we've really been moving a lot, I think, over the last 10 years. And when we first started this, it was a really exciting project that we were able to do on our own time. And I think, you know, part of the challenge 7, 8 years ago was that we were kind of transitioning out from that training phase and, you know, in early postdoctoral training.
Although I will say, our first episode was actually 11 years ago. I'm hoping to release this on the 11th anniversary of our episode 1 on January 30th. But yeah, so it's been more than a decade since we all got together.
Yeah, which was right at the end of grad school, right? And so, you know, finishing up training, and then moving out into the world of real science, aka still training in postdoc land for a while trying to figure out exactly what we were doing. But yeah, so pretty wild. So those of you that did tune in to those episodes maybe 7, 8 years back know that I finished up my PhD and came down to Atlanta, Georgia. So this is where Emory University lives. And I came here to do a postdoc. I was at the time interested in B cells and vaccine B cell selection, vaccine based B cell selection, antigen targeting, things like this. So came down here to work as postdoc. And that went really well. Worked for a guy named Bali Kalundran, who's now an endowed chair out at Stanford. You know, got a paper out, but as I was doing that in about 2017, two things happened. The first is that obviously Bali transferred to Stanford, and the second is that we were expecting my first child. And then I had a choice to make. I could either follow him out to San Francisco, which was appealing because it's nice out there, but also with a child, it was less appealing because I thought we were going to be poor forever. So decided not to do that.
As someone with a child in the Bay Area,
yeah,
you are correct.
Not good. No. Okay. So the first off to the side story. So here's how that went. I went out there with my wife, and we were in East Palo Alto, and I was like, you know, let's just get an Airbnb. We'll tour the lab. We'll get a sense of what the housing looks like around here. And we were in this Airbnb, and it was cool, kind of artsy, but it was in East Palo Alto. And we got up the next morning, and there was a drug dealer standing outside the corner of the Airbnb, just like looking at me. Yeah. And I realized that the cost of that house was going to be like $1.3 million. I was like, I can't, guys. I don't know what to do here. So
East Palo Alto is now all of Facebook. They've like completely redeveloped it. So that house is at least $2.3 million now.
It seemed like a great investment.
Yeah,
it seemed like a great investment that I could absolutely not make. So we decided not to do that. So instead, I was looking around here at Emory. We owned a home. We had our first child, and I found Iñaki Sanz's lab. And Iñaki here is the head of rheumatology within the School of Medicine. So he is a clinician scientist, does some really good work around autoimmunity, lupus in particular. And I made a big switch, made a switch from sort of basic mouse immunology into highly translational human stuff. We were looking at dysregulation of B cells and autoantibody responses and all of these sorts of things. And I was developing some single cell pipelines and high dimensional flow cytometry. And then we hit COVID. And so we were one of the groups that was fortunate to be in a position where we could sort of alter our clinical apparatus rather than collecting SLE, lupus patients. We started collecting COVID patients off of the ICU floors, had a really, really fantastic partner in crime to help do that. And so
collecting the patients, put them in jars.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. But in all seriousness, he's actually at UPitt now. His name is Rich Raminel. But he was on the ICU floors, you know, consenting patients' families because they were on ventilators and, you know, going over patient lists with me. And it was really an intense time, which I'm sure we will get more into. But we were able to collect a bunch of those patient samples, and it turns out if you were looking at dysregulated immune responses in the context of autoimmunity, you can actually do a lot of work around serious infectious disease. So again, don't need to get into it right now, but we were able to publish a bunch of papers looking at B cells.
Nature immunology, nature communications, you know.
We did well.
We
did really well. I'm proud of a lot of that work. But yeah, it was fast paced. I don't know that I would go back to that time. But yeah, did some really cool work there. And then at some point made the pitch that probably we should have a lab to ourselves, or I should be running something here. And so they were generous enough to support that effort, and I established a lab. So now I am an assistant professor here at Emory. Work in the Lawrence Center for Human Immunology, which still is kind of housed within rheumatology, but really I'm just sort of general immunology. And over the course of that time that I just mentioned, over the course of COVID, also had two additional children. So we now have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old currently. So frequently underwater, but I'm really excited for two reasons. Coming back to the podcast, and the first is that, you know, since grad school, I think that this was something that we we're doing because it was fun. I think, I hope that we're a little good at it. But I always enjoyed it because it helped us, it helped me look at these papers in an interesting way. I can now justify doing this as part of my job, which just feels great. And I know that we're not streaming video, but like I have an office now and I'm here in a business meeting at that office. And that's wonderful. I think it's going to do wonders for, you know, continued ability to support this. And also, I think, you know, coming back at this now, having gone through a lot of that, I feel like we've been through some shit. You know, yes. Like we graduated our PhD. All of us did postdocs. They looked a little different, I think, but have sort of navigated. Yeah, we'll get there. But have navigated through sort of what is the training period in science. And, you know, I'm certainly not done, right? I'm an assistant professor, and now maybe grants through the NIH aren't going to be a thing. So we'll see how that all works out. But
that's why we need those sweet, sweet Patreon dollars.
That's exactly right. So at $3 a pop, you can help fund the Woodruff Lab, which would be great. But no, I feel like we're going to be able to bring a perspective now that we maybe didn't have before, but still bring in a lot of those conversations that we were having early on, way back in our PhD, and come at it from a different angle. So super excited to be here. Excited to hear, Kate, what you've been up to. Kevin, I know we've been in a little bit closer touch. I should mention that Kevin was a co-author, co-first author on one of those COVID papers, specifically a long COVID paper that I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. So we've been in touch a little bit more, but Kay, I'm super excited to hear what you've been up to.
Yeah, thanks. This is an aside. There's like a leaf blower going. Will it cancel out?
I heard no, we can hear it.
Okay.
The good news is the one that came up while Matt was talking again. So maybe some more behind the scenes for listeners. We're now using a recording system called Riverside FM, and it's going to hopefully make the editing process much more streamlined. It is very simple to just like mute you for a chunk. So the leaf blower that went on while Matt was talking, that's going to be gone. If it comes up again while you're talking, it'll be a little harder, but I think
okay. I can also try to pause. It seems like it's going on intermittently, which is the worst sort of leaf blower. Oh, I can hear it. I can hear it rumbling. I actually hate leaf blowers. This is a big issue for me. Oh my God.
I can't record today.
On cue. We could try, but okay. He's stopped for now.
Okay.
Go great. Ahead. Yeah, so since our last recording, I think, Kevin, you were mentioning that around our last recording was maybe like a year or so, or maybe right after I had defended my PhD. And so from there, I've been on a bit of a ride, I would say. When I left my PhD, I was less interested in staying in academic science. I was much more excited by the opportunity to go into biotech, to develop, you know, a lot of this basic research and these mechanisms that we discover and characterize in the academic setting and turn those into therapies and medicines. I'm just much more, I think, like, from my perspective, the type of work that you do I find more interesting, and the way in which you do that work I was much more energized by. So I think, like, in academic settings, we have this idea, and it's not necessarily true, that, you know, there's this lone genius in the lab toiling away, and by and large,
I... blower for covering over. Kate's disparaging of Matt and my chosen profession.
No, it's not a disparagement. I think that it's like, I think it's an incorrect assumption about academia,
totally,
but
totally.
It is also something that many people in academia hold as an ideal. And I think the most successful academics are the ones who work collaboratively, right? And so 100%. Like I could have been very happy working like on teams and collaboratively in academia, but in biotech you have to work as a team. There is no lone scientist in the corner. the skills of communication and leadership and teamwork are really at the top of, like, the skills that are going to make you successful. Those are, like, the things you must have in, like, your organization. And so, you know, just, like, that environment and that direction was really appealing to me. So anyway, all of that being said, I have been really going through working at different biotechs in the Bay Area since then. So focusing on, I've primarily been in, like, smaller startups, though I've been at a larger company as well, really focused on early stage R&D. So either, you know, developing new therapeutic concepts where you're trying to do a little bit more of that basic research, or using recent findings from academic labs on what are different disease mechanisms, how can we turn those into therapies that haven't been developed before, or, you know, thinking about advances in the actual, like, drug discovery and finding new molecules and characterizing those molecules. Primarily focused also on autoimmunity, some infections here and there, but I would say, like, the majority of the work that I've been doing has been human like translational immunology focused on autoimmune diseases. So my most recent job before the one that I'm currently at, we focused on making maps of the immune system. So looking at RNA, epigenetic profiles, and genetics, and turning these into, like, integrative maps that you could then use for both monitoring patients over time. So this was something that we did in a clinical study during COVID, as well as using that information for target discovery. So finding new targets for medicines and then developing those into therapeutics. So it's been really fun. You know, I like one of the things that I like about autoimmunity and then also my job is that it, like, forces me to pick up and learn about different immunological areas that maybe, you know, I didn't train in directly, but you have to, like, learn the skill to, like, pick it up fast, orient yourself, and sort of, like, pull out the interesting finding and kind of, like, apply that. So either, like, in my job, like, applying that to drug discovery, or in autoimmunity, applying that to, like, communicating to other, like, interested people who, you know, want to hear us, who, you know, want to hear our takes on it. So, but then in my COVID experience, though, we're, like,
before you get there,
yeah,
I have a really important question.
Yes.
What is the best autoimmune disease?
Normatively?
So I would say that's really hard. So I've worked on a couple. I think, like, in industry, you're going to find, like, so much IBD focus. And so I've spent a lot of time with IBD, spent time with IBD training in my PhD as well. Obviously, like, some real titans of IBD at Children's Hospital, where Kevin and I trained. So I would say, like, I'm partial to IBD, also really interested in lupus. I'm really excited by the therapeutics that are coming out around lupus. They're, like, very cutting edge, very interesting, and you're seeing, like, some really encouraging patient data.
Yeah, no, that's, and I'm sure that we'll get into all of this. But I was at the American College of Rheumatology conference. They invited me to go speak, which was actually my first, like, legitimate, real invited speakership, which was cool. But I would say 90% of the conference was about who is making currently the best CAR T cell targeting CD19 or BCMA or, you know, whatever it is. There's an enormous amount of therapeutic potential there right now. So I'm, like, sort of excited that you're in this space as well, because I think it's blowing up the literature at the moment. So
it's fun to hear some of the overlaps, because obviously we'll get into it, but I've been doing microbiome stuff and there's a huge IBD focus there too. I just want to say, given your time about the promise of CAR T, I recorded a minisode a while ago that I called putting the CAR T before the horse. Because I was very skeptical of CAR T cells a decade ago. It's nice to hear that they're coming back.
Yeah, they might be actually curing lupus.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. I would say, like, from a market perspective, your skepticism is warranted and probably continues to be warranted, but the actual, like, individual patient impacts that are reported are really exciting.
Cool.
And if I remember, your skepticism was frequently based around the fact that you can't find peptides that allow a CAR T to then target a cancer effectively. That continues to be a problem. The autoimmunity applications actually turn out to be easier because you know exactly what you're targeting.
Cool. I was right.
Sort
of. I'm perfectly fine to be wrong, to be clear. but that's good. I'm glad to hear I wasn't totally full of shit back then.
It's a pretty common theme too, to say, like, let's make this cancer therapeutic. Oh wait, does it work in autoimmune disease too? like all of like the checkpoint inhibitors, now there's checkpoint agonists. So, you know, you're just always like flipping that coin and you're like, okay, I wanted to turn on the immune system. Can this actually just turn it off? Let's try that part.
Nice. Well, that's cool. And did you want to say anything about your, personal life? Jordan's still doing good. I don't know if you want to use his name.
It's fine. Jordan's doing great. What I was going to say was my COVID story is that I had a secret COVID baby. I, for whatever reason, it was, you know.
Who was it secret from exactly?
It was secret from anyone I did not see in person.
Ah.
I only told people I saw in person.
What?
Or could logic together that I was pregnant. Because that is one of the downsides of being a woman. It's harder to have a secret COVID baby in person. But, you know, like, we were all, like, we were at home. I was so fortunate to do my first trimester at home. So I could, you know, take a nap, vomit in peace, and not have to, like, run around an office doing that. But, yeah, I had my daughter, and she is just, like, so exciting. And she's almost three now, and she's obsessed with Halloween.
Nice.
She's
Halloween's the best.
Best Halloween. Best holiday to be obsessed with. That's awesome.
Yeah. Even this morning, she told me, "Mom, Halloween is over." And I said, "Yeah, baby, it's been over for months." but she, you know, loves a costume, loves a theatric. You know, anything that she can do to perform in front of people, she is all for it. It's just
okay,
really,
so
really sweet.
After mom, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
your 3-year-old and my 5-year-old should meet.
Well, especially if your children have any interest in Frozen. My goodness,
so
what
here's
a banger.
here's one of my favorite stories from my 5-year-old. So she was 3 at the time, and Frozen had come out, and there was a, I don't know, 7 or 8 year old at the playground with her, and my daughter certainly loves to sing Frozen, right? And so they were all out on the playground, and Let It Go was what everyone was singing at the time. And this little girl, who is, again, like 7 or 8 years old, is at the top of the playground tower, belting Let It Go out towards the playground. Like,
God,
you do.
I don't know like, where
right?
this is going.
And so my daughter got really excited about that, and she was like 3 or 4, and she climbed this tower, which really she had no business doing, but we like to let that sort of thing go. And so she climbed this tower, and she starts singing next to this girl, and this girl was furious. So mad. But my daughter wasn't old enough to pick up on those social cues. All my daughter could understand was this girl was singing a song that she liked. And so she just started singing it louder with her and more theatrically. And so there was this song battle that happens in the playground in this like crow's nest of that I will never forget. My 3-year-old at the time absolutely won that. And the other girl stormed off. Left of the playground. So anyway.
Well, it's good. I was worried that you were going to say that somebody was screaming, "Let it go," and then somebody let go of something they shouldn't have let go of.
That would be another bad playground outcome. Yeah.
That's fantastic. My son was super into Frozen for a little while, and then decided that I don't know exactly what happened. The movies that he was most obsessed with for a while, he just never wants to watch anymore. I'm like, can we please not watch another episode of Dino Ranch and just watch Frozen again, please?
So here's an interesting aspect of doing Audio Immunity 10 years later, is y'all get to get introduced to the Disney world.
I was just listening, so I should say, I have been re-listening to old episodes of Audio Immunity sort of as I am, like, trying to rebuild our website and sort of remember what the hell it is we do here. And I was just listening to one where Kate and I were discussing the fact that Edward from Twilight had 1918 flu and the infectious properties of viruses for vampires and viruses as metaphors for infectious disease, all of that stuff. Pop culture does make some impact on us here at Audio Immunity. Kate is usually the one bringing it in.
Very true. Very true.
And I've just been dying to hear your take on the last couple seasons of The Bachelor, because, you know.
Oh boy. You know, I've moved on from The Bachelor, but I'm all in on Traitors. So I think what we'll have to do is we'll have to have, like, a parent/pop culture corner at the end of some of these episodes, just for little updates here. Mm-hmm. Because anyone who knows me knows I am pop culture obsessed. I make no apologies for it. Love pop culture. Currently on Amazon Prime, they are streaming a new show, Pop Culture Jeopardy. Why I am not on this show? I've maybe missed in total, I think there are 25 episodes. I've maybe missed like 20 questions or 20 answers. I'm here for giving the updates. So I actually did look into applying because I did hear that they were trying to find teams. Mm-hmm. And so you need three people on a team. And so I was like, okay, who's going to be the third person? I started thinking very strategically about it. And I was like,
that'll shock
okay,
anyone
like,
who knows Kate. She's being strategic.
I got the reality TV. I have all of like the musicals. I have movies. What I really need is someone who's like deep in sports. Like what else do you like? What are the other? Oh, I really need someone who like can do like 80s type things. Like a lot of like 80s pop culture is a bit of a hole of mine. So yeah. Anyway, I was like, basically assessing all of my friends and then just ranking them, but unfortunately did not come to like the perfect, the perfect group of three to audition with.
If you need some help with algorithms to like assess the ranking, do some clustering or whatever.
I think we should consider putting Kate's ranking of friends as a perk to subscribing.
Patreon.
Yeah. It's like all of my friends, and then it's like that, like, what is that 5-star diagram thing in video games? And so, like, I'm rating them on their different qualities.
The attribute trees for the...
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. That's
intense.
Yeah. That's hysterical, and it also just doesn't surprise me in the least. I could not be less shocked about that. I'm sorry that you don't have a team yet. Maybe one of our Patreon subscribers could, audition to be on Kate's team for, what is it, Pop Culture Jeopardy?
Pop Culture Jeopardy on Amazon Prime, hosted by Colin Jost. This is not an ad, but I will take the ad dollars. I will sell out immediately. We're listener supported, and also the support of our favorite listener, Jeps Bezos.
You never know. It could happen.
We need some of that sweet, sweet billionaire money.
Yep.
It's going around.
I won't go on the tangent that I want to go on. But since nobody has been kind enough to throw to me to introduce myself.
I was just about to throw to you, Kevin.
It's all right. It's fine.
What have you been doing, Kevin?
Take it over.
Speaking of Jeff Bezos, Kevin, what have you been up to?
That
That's what we call a
sense.
Segue in the biz.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, so last we recorded, I was a curriculum fellow in the immunology program at Harvard. So I went from my PhD in 2014, I defended, and then I started a position as a curriculum fellow, which is basically it's a teaching sort of postdoc, and my particular role was to work on the new Masters of Medical Science in Immunology program at Harvard. One of the parts of that job, though, was that there was sort of a 20% time to do your own stuff, to do independent research that you wanted to follow up on. Most of the curriculum fellows were doing educational research. This is a pretty important field where people look at like different kinds of assessment. They do sort of surveys of students or curriculum design kinds of things. I really wanted to keep working on experimental science, and I had always been sort of interested in computing kinds of things, and wanted to learn how to code, and because I had this sort of free time that I could use towards research, I started a postdoc with this woman named Rachel Dutton, who did cheese microbiome work. And she basically had a large data set, and she didn't have to pay me, and so she was happy to just let me sort of noodle around with this data set. And from there, I just basically got into computational biology. So I did a postdoc with her while I was a curriculum fellow. And then after that, I did a short postdoc with this guy, Curtis Huttenhauer, who works on the gut microbiome, develops a lot of the software for doing metagenomics in the human gut microbiome, IBD stuff, but also the gut microbiome is implicated in basically every aspect of human health and disease. So he's sort of got his fingers in lots of different things. So in that lab, I got sort of more computational training and interacted in that position with a person from Wellesley College who was also doing human gut microbiome work. And she really was looking for a postdoc or a research scientist that could sort of take on this major project that she had. She had a grant from the NIH that was quite large for a small college like Wellesley is. Most
specifically looking for someone trained in cheese.
No, not necessarily. That didn't hurt. It didn't hurt because she does have a lab class where she does food microbiome stuff. But the basic idea was that she needed somebody that was interested in doing human gut microbiome, that had the computational skills needed to analyze these data, and also was willing to go work at a small college. And at the time, I was still pretty interested in potentially teaching at a small college, so it seemed like a great opportunity. It was also a really cool project looking at the relationship of the gut microbiome and brain development in kids. Also, my son was born basically the month after I started in that position. So my wife was pregnant, and I was like, I don't know that I really want to be doing the sort of very intense postdoc and, you know, like hustling to try to get faculty positions right as my son was being born. And so it seemed like a little bit lower key.
It's a fun game to play.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll come back to that. That's why I don't remember any of our last recording stretch.
Yeah. And then I was there for like a year, and then COVID lockdown happened, and I will not go into the long and arduous training that I got in wrangling really, really annoying and complicated data sets. But basically, 80% of my job for that first couple of years was really just like, how do I sanitize the inputs from all of these different sources? Every table, every time I got an export table from our collaborators, the columns were named different things, which messes with code in a way that is not fun.
Kevin, I'm gonna pause you for just a second. I have to say, there was like a 2-year stretch there where we would get on the phone, and every single time you were ready to strangle a collaborator over some column that was incorrectly placed or switched around. Like it seemed like you were in a pretty dark computational space.
It was rough. I mean, I will say it was it was quite good training for what I now call defensive coding, which is that when I am writing code for a thing, I just riddle it with like checks to make sure that assumptions that I am making remain true anytime new data is added in. So like, import a table, say like, I'm going to take the first column. The first column should have subject IDs. Does it actually have subject IDs? Are those subject IDs all formatted the way that they're supposed to be? When you put it in age, does it make sense that this child's age is in years or weeks or days or whatever it's supposed to be? Because I would get situations where I'd like looking at a table of child ages and it's like, you know, 1.2, 0.8, 1.2, 45. What?
Yeah.
So it's like all of a sudden...
Just an old baby.
All of a sudden...
That's age discrimination.
There was a cell that was in weeks when all the rest of them were in years. I had one where I have time points, which are supposed to be like the incremental number of the visits. So it's like visit one, visit two. I had a visit 1.5. Just thrown in the middle. If you're working with data or if you're working with code, you know, like integers are different than... float values with like fractional values, and it just like throws everything to chaos. So anyway, that was really fun and terrible, but very good training. And yeah, I was there for, I've done a number of projects there, doing essentially data science. So it's gut microbiome, but it's less bioinformatics than it is data science, taking tables of data, doing statistics, machine learning, that kind of thing. And was on the faculty job market for a while. I think can sort of get into why I struggled to actually land a job. But the upshot is that I am starting in 2 weeks, actually 1 week now, as an assistant professor at Tufts Medical Center, finally after a long time. It took me 11 years, but part of me is like, well, I kind of like did another PhD in computational biology. So if you subtract 6 years off of that time, only a 5-year postdoc.
That's a lot of COVID math in there.
Yeah. Well,
there's COVID math in there.
Yeah.
There's a little COVID math. There's a parental leave.
Yeah,
you know,
FMLA.
Just like...
Yeah. I'll take all of it. But the upshot is that I am starting my own lab. It's going to be a computational lab, and it's going to be still gut microbiome. I'm going to be in the GI department. It's a department filled with MDs. I'm going to be the only PhD there, but also hopefully collaborating with micro and immuno at Tufts Medical School. Matt and I have ongoing collaborations, so I'm helping to build some software for Matt. I think we can get into those details later, but basically I am now... fully computational biologist, and really excited to get going. I'm technically unemployed right now, but eventually I will have an office where I can take business meetings for audio.
This will technically be, I believe, your first professional publication as an independent lab head, right? By the time you get this published, this comes out of the bottom lab, so...
Yeah, although I'm going to release this before I officially start, so...
Okay.
All right. Well, maybe so, the next episode.
Yeah, okay, fair.
First, I think, like, we're sort of skipping over this a little bit, but, like, congratulations, Kevin! This is huge news! This is huge!
Thank you. It's very exciting. I first interviewed for this position back in May of last year, so it's been quite a long process. It was sort of off the normal academic track of hiring. It has been... It's been a little unnerving. My funding ran out July of last year, and then Matt paid me for a little while, and then I got a tiny little grant to pay me for another couple of months. But yeah, it was touch and go there for a while. But I'm excited.
I think just hearing what you're saying about like your postdoc being so long, blah, 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 just to yada yada that for you. I think that I don't think it's correct to think about it, though, as like that was your career. Right? Yeah. Like, that's not, like, your career, like, your job is starting now. Like, it's, like, all part of the journey. 100%. And, like, you're 100%. Doing great science. You're going to continue to do great science. So I don't want to diminish, like, or... One of the things I find really interesting is people like to, or you know, there's an outside perspective that if you complete some sort of academic training in a shorter period of time, that means that you are this like wunderkind genius. But every other like metric I know associated with knowledge acquisition is also associated with time and yeah. being able to go in depth and being able to get, you know, varied amounts of training and look at different disciplines to help inform like your view. And all of those things, you know, are dependent on like the amount of like investment you want to give it. So I think like the fact that you've been able to give it this much time and like really develop this unique perspective to then found your lab on is really exciting and just like a testament to you as a scientist.
Well,
so I think
you.
I think it's great. And that's, Matt, that's really for fine. Whom everything came easy, you know, like screw you. No. No, Matt's also worked very hard.
Yeah. No, we'll talk all about that.
Yeah. I also want to say like the other thing that has been the other perspective that I have had on this is that if I had been willing to drag my family across the country for a postdoc, if I had been willing to narrowly focus on the same topic, right? So if I had gone from an innate immunology PhD to an innate immunity postdoc, like I could have done that, but I made different choices because I wanted to spend more time with my family and spend more time with my kids. I have a second kid, I should have said, who's 15 months now. And yeah, I mean, I could have made choices that would have landed me in a different position. And when I was not sure if I was going to get here, the sort of solace was looking back, would I have made different choices, you know, to not go to a small college to do this fun project, but instead like stick with the PhD or stick with the postdoc at a, you know, Harvard or whatever. And I don't think that I would make different choices even if I had not gotten here because I was prioritizing different things, and I still made it. So that's great. That's exciting.
Yeah,
it's helpful.
And totally selfishly, for the purposes of this podcast, like I sort of mentioned it earlier, but I'm super excited for us to get into some of these high level science conversations now because we really, the three of us, did take very different paths, and I think that one of the criticisms of PhD training is frequently that, you know, you're being trained by people that have made it through one specific implementation of like what science looks like after you graduate. And I really hope that because two of the three of us have really moved away from that path in a super interesting and successful way, that y'all be able to provide some perspective that maybe we wouldn't have had 10 years ago when we launched this thing, because you're just surrounded by this sort of monolithic view of what academic training needs to look like in order to be successful. And I think that increasingly it's clear that it is not successful for everyone, right? Like we train way more people than are going to find their way to the end of like a clear faculty position at an R1 research institution, right? So I'm really excited about those conversations as they sort of play into how we think about science and experimentation and project directions and all of that stuff.
Yeah, totally agree. So I think maybe the last thing that we should talk about is sort of what we are interested in bringing to this podcast going forward. I mean, this is a podcast about the immune system. It's a podcast about infectious disease. Obviously, it would have been interesting had we continued recording through COVID. I think that would have broken me personally.
Same.
I did not have the time for that.
Totally.
There's no way.
Totally happy for some of the other podcasts that kept going through and informing people. Those were mostly senior PIs that I'm aware of, at least, doing that. So obviously different life trajectories. But now on the other side of that pandemic, possibly going into a new one, yay, H5N1. There was, as an aside, in that flu episode, there was a moment where I was like, or I think Kate maybe was like, you know, H5N1, it's the bird flu thing. And I was just like, from my perch here in 2025, just thinking like, oh my God, like, was this really something that people didn't know about?
Oh, boy.
Anyway, so, yeah, so I guess maybe starting with Kate, since you are not in academia, you're still doing immune system related stuff, but like what kinds of things, what kind of papers or topics are you most interested to be highlighting here and going through?
Yeah, you know, I think that my perspective has really changed towards, you know, how can we apply this to patients? How can we apply this to drug discovery? So I think looking at, you know, some of these papers that are like looking at human biology, human immunology in particular, are really exciting to me now. I think it's some of the hardest work to do, and I have such a new appreciation for it now. I also think one of the things that I'm really hoping that we can do in this podcast, like outside of some of this like scientific discussion, is, you know, discuss some of these topics that are relevant to scientists and people who are interested in how like science works, more, you know, reflections on training, on the academic environment, mm-hmm. on what does industry research look like, and sort of getting a bit more peek into other aspects of like the scientific process and how people contribute to it. So those are some of the conversations I'm really excited about.
Yeah, awesome. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think that we're in a position now where we can speak a little more forcefully on how science policy impacts research and dollar acquisition and people's careers generally. I'd love to have those conversations. You know, my lab continues to be interested in B cells, and you know, I hit some of those points back in grad school, although it was a little more focused on sort of the early vaccination side. Continue to be interested there, but increasingly really interested in the application of sort of next generation technology towards controlling the immune system. I mean, that's really where my lab is headed, whether it be through vaccine design, whether it be through direct immunomodulation. We do some mRNA lipid nanoparticle work now that I think is exciting. But I think generally understanding how the next wave of technology is going to hit immunology and disease is a super interesting place to be. I think AI is going to significantly alter the way that we think about how science is done over the next 5 or 10 years. I think it's going to significantly impact my job. I think it already has, actually. And so sort of discussing the intersection of next generation technology and how science has traditionally been done and where that needs to go in the future, or at least we think it should go, is really a place that I'd like to explore.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. And I think, you know, for my part, I'm really excited. One of the things that I am most interested in now, having been 11 years primarily away from the bench and doing all of this data science, all of this, you know, clinical adjacent work, I am really interested. This is sort of a corollary to what Kate was talking about, but I am really interested in finding ways to take the stuff that we see in people. We see in associations, a lot of gut microbiome stuff is sort of best classified as epidemiology. We sort of do observational work and we see statistical associations. I'm really interested in ways of taking that back into the lab and doing experiments and showing cause, because so many papers that I read, it's getting a little better now, but over the last 10 years, so many gut microbiome papers have been like, gut microbiome, these species, same 4 species every time it seems, are associated with this disease and that disease, these genes, tRNA synthesis involved in this, and it's like, is that really what you're seeing? So I'm really interested in ways of taking those things back into the lab and looking at papers where people are doing, we used to talk about bench to bedside research. I'm really interested in bedside to bench research, sort of taking stuff we see in people and seeing if we can understand mechanisms. And also, I'm hoping the perspective I'm hoping to provide is sort of a more quantitative computational perspective. I think, again, listening back to those old episodes, and I can remember this the sort of perspective of saying, like, if you have to prove it to me with a p-value, I don't necessarily believe it. I want to see a Western blot where a band, like, is there and then it's not there anymore. That was the perspective I had during my PhD, and I think it's not totally gone, but I think there are a lot of quantitative and computational methods that can do a lot, and also the smoke and mirrors of big data analysis can also sort of hide some deficiencies that I hopefully I'm able to spot a little bit better now than I used to be. So I'm excited to talk about, you know, more big data, multi-omics and machine learning kinds of approaches. I will start worrying about AI when LLMs can hold a pipette or can inject a patient with something. Until then, I am, they sort of seem like interesting curiosities. I use them to help with writing code, not going to lie, but I still think it's, there's a lot of hype, so interested to talk maybe about that as well.
Yeah, and I'm interested to have Kevin consistently critique the way that I analyze large data sets, which incidentally is why he's the co-first author on the Nature Communications paper. I basically called him up and I was like, I don't know what to do with this data. It's real hard.
Yeah.
Help, yeah. Please.
Many more collaborations to come. I suppose, is there anything else that you guys wanted to talk about before we wrap up here?
I was just going to start throwing out random ideas of things that we could do in the future without vetting any of them first between the two of you, and then thought maybe that that's not the best approach to bringing new ideas to the table.
I mean, you can always bring them up and then I can cut them. So.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think like what I'm hearing from you guys and what I was hoping to communicate was that, you know, I think the format that we originally launched was really focused on interpreting science and maybe was really geared towards like that grad student audience or, you know, people who are just really interested in science and want to go like one level deeper. And I think like as we have like grown in our careers and matured in like our perspectives, like we can see a lot of really interesting places that, you know, science is affecting, like Matt was saying, policy, AI, you know, and how it like more broadly just affects society. And I think that it's like a really great opportunity for us to discuss some of those issues as well. Like not just go into, you know, what's the coolest paper or what's the most exciting discovery that we've seen recently, but also like how is this impacting the sorts of medicines that are being developed, what we're seeing in the clinic. You know, how people are using ChatGPT to write their grants now. I am also like, I'm very excited to talk about AI. I think I might be somewhere in the middle between you two. So that's great. definitely resonate with what you're saying, Kevin, about the pipette. But then also, I agree with Matt that that is barreling down. And I we are having some... there's going to be an upheaval in how we do certain things.
Disagree with that. I think my perspective is, I think that it is a transformative technology. I think that a lot of the hype is misplaced in ways that hide the ways that it is actually going to affect things. I think, you know, Matt was talking about, not on air, but in a conversation we had about like having a postdoc start and like wanting to sort of like get up to speed and just like feeding it all of Matt's recent papers to give a summary. And like, that's very helpful. That's super useful to like have a starting point. Or like with code, there's a lot of places where it's really amazing to be able to just like start writing a boilerplate function and have it generate the code. Like, that's cool. And also, I think the sort of concerns about, like, people aren't going to need scientists anymore because we're just going to, like, ask LLMs what the next big discovery is, or, like, we're not going to need coders anymore because we'll just ask ChatGPT to write our server backend or whatever. Those kinds of hype things I just think are a little silly. And also the fact that... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just say, you should... I don't know if you have Google Gemini into your search function. I have it on my search. If you have it, you should Google, do naive T cells need Signal too? And just see what Gemini tells you.
Oh, that could be a fun... segment that we do. What does AI think happens here?
Exactly.
A little
sneak peek for, I guess, our very forthcoming AI episode.
No, I think what we need is we need to hide that behind a paywall so that Gemini can't learn from our podcast what it should be answering. There's a very Ouroboros quality to LLM training these days that I don't necessarily want to contribute to. So in any case, I think in terms of boilerplate at the end here, so a couple of things that I want to say. So I am currently working on reposting the website. Hopefully by the time you hear this, our new website will be up. It is now at audiomunity.org, which is audiomunity.org. I am going to include all of our old episodes on there. Any mention you hear about emunity.org, you should ignore, because those will send you now to a URL squatting crypto site, because we let the registration expire, and somebody else bought it, and it's not us anymore.
If you like Korean poker.
Exactly. We also have a page at patreon.com/audioimmunity, and there you can pledge... We are sort of thinking about how we're going to do the tiers. I think we should maybe start with a single tier, just like, you want to help us out, and then we'll sort of work on perks and stuff. We had started to talk about that years ago, and we never really got to the point where we had any particular listener perks, but I think we're thinking about ways that we can sort of provide a little extra content. Most of our stuff, I think, is going to be free to listen to, but we're working on that. If you have suggestions for papers to read or topics to discuss or ideas for Patreon tiers and perks that you'd like to see, please get in touch with us. I think the best way to do that is going to be to comment for now on Patreon. I will probably set up an email address, which I haven't done yet, that you can email if you prefer. Anybody have any other thoughts?
Yeah, if you are still contributing to us, and that's intentional after 7 years, you're the best. We'd love to hear from you.
You are the best of humanity. Yes, exactly. Exactly right. Totally. Anybody have social media that they want to plug? We used to have a Facebook page that Kate was supposed to be in charge of, and she never did anything with.
I left Facebook a long time ago. maybe around 11 years ago.
Yeah, I am not interested in that anymore. I do have a Blue Sky account. I'm on some of the Fediverse, like Mastodon and Lemmy and stuff. But mostly I think I have my website. I'll probably put that in the show notes, but. I have a GitHub. That's the main social media I use these days is GitHub.
Is anyone surprised that Kevin has Blue Sky? Nope.
Nope. Nope, you shouldn't.
Is anyone surprised Kevin said Fediverse? Nope.
I think people will be surprised, and I can cut this if you want, Kate, but I think people will be surprised. I think if somebody had asked 10 years ago, which one of these people is most likely to work for Google someday? I think that they would have said me.
That's true.
That's not what happened.
That is very true. Kevin was like a proselytizer for like Google products. And
Google Plus,
I remember
in particular.
I was, RIP. I met my wife on Google Plus. That's a reference to a prolific poster, but Casey Newton, the I was like, I hate Google products. I'm not going to use this. I love Excel. I love Microsoft Office. Boy, did that change. I worked for an alphabet company, and now I am fully integrated into the Google product sphere. And like, if there was like, if they brought back the Google Glass, I would buy it. I'm in, baby. I'm not getting out.
And
also, I cannot learn another suite of enterprise products. Please stop making me learn.
And on the other side of that, I have become fully, like, I run Linux now. I only use free and open source software for the most part. I really hate using Google Docs. I would much rather have a plain text that I can version control in Git and post to GitHub. So anyway, we can get into all of those other quirks of software usage another time. In the meantime, this has been Audiomunity. I think we're going to go with episode 33, or season 2, episode 1. Something like that.
You'll figure it out when you look at the episode. Exactly. You'll know what we decided.
Yeah. And I need to go dig out the MP3s that I was using before for the intro and outro. I think they're probably still going to be composed by Rachel Rennick. I might use something off of her new album instead of the old one, but... yeah.
Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, thanks, Rachel.
Bye, everyone.
Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes.